In tropical lands, most forest nutrients are stored not in the soil, as in temperate regions, but in the vegetation that covers it. When leaves or branches fall, the carbon and nitrogen in the debris are rapidly reabsorbed by the hyper-efficient root system of tropical plants. If loggers or farmers clear away the vegetation, the local supply of nutrients is removed with it. Normally, the forest quickly fills in bare spots, such as those created when big trees fall, and damage is kept to a minimum. But if the opening is too large, or the ground is kept clear too long, the sun and rain decompose whatever organic matter remains and bake the surface into something resembling brick in both color and impermeability. In short order, the land becomes almost incapable of sustaining life. Thus, the tropical forest, despite its fabulous vitality, exists on a knife edge. The implications of this ecological view were described most forcefully in Amazonia, Man and Culture in a Counterfeit Paradise, by Betty J. Meggers, the Smithsonian archaeologist. Published in 1971, it may be the most influential book ever written about the Amazon. Agriculture, Meggers pointed out, depends on extracting the wealth of the soil. With little soil wealth to extract, she said, Amazonian farmers face inherent ecological limitations. The only form of agriculture they can practice for a long time is slash and burn, or swidden, as it is sometimes known. Farmers clear small fields with axes and machetes, burn off the chaff and refuse, and plant their seeds. The ash gives the soil a quick shot of nutrients, giving the crop a chance. As the crops grow, the jungle rapidly returns, weeds first, then fast-growing tropical trees. In the few years before forest recovers the plot, farmers can eke something out of the land. Slash and burn, Meggers told me, is a superb response to ecological limits. Farmers grab a few harvests, but the soil is not bared to rain and sun long enough to incur permanent damage. Switching from field to field to field, swidden farmers live in the forest without destroying the ecosystems they depend on, a supple, balanced harmony. This ancient lifeway survives today, according to this theory, in the ring-shaped compounds of the Yanomamo. Most of the Yanomamo actually live around South America's other huge river system, the Orinoco, but they are seen as emblematic of Amazonia as well. Gliding nearly nude beneath the trees, cultivating their temporary gardens, the Yanomamo are often said to be windows into the past, living much the same lives as their great-great-great-grandparents. Their long-term existence has not damaged the forest, Meggers told me, a testament to slash and burn's power to keep human groups sustainably within the rigid ecological limits of the tropics. A second reason that slash and burn is required, Meggers told me, is the region's propensity for suffering mega Niño events, super-strong El Niño climate swings that occur every 300 to 500 years. In the archaeological record, she said, we're able to pick up severe droughts related to these mega Niño events. What these did was reduce the food supply. The 1998 El Niño was a small example. They saw droughts, forest fires, and reduction of resources from when trees don't flower. Forest fires in the upriver state of Roraima that year claimed such a huge area that Brazil requested aid from the United Nations. In the past, Meggers said, the well-established groups that were sitting in one territory for several hundred years couldn't survive the droughts, so they broke up. We see this repeated at least four times in the last two millennia. In other words, any Indians who tried to go beyond slash and burn to permanent cultivation would be knocked back to slash and burn by a mega Niño.